Excerpt from The Dead, appearing in The Dubliners by James Joyce. Initially, I thought to recite only the final paragraph, well known and often quoted, which does stand quite easily on its own, without the several preceding paragraphs that set the scene and the tone of its sublime summation. Instead, I've chosen to include them, as the beauty of the final stanza is made all the more eloquent. What follows has proven to be a great challenge for me, to read aloud without falling victim to the overwhelming sadness, pathos, and beauty of both the sentiment and the prose. Joyce has managed to capture the painful nature of love and loss, and the transient quality of our brief moments lived in the face of certain death. It is within these few paragraphs that we are able to cement our kinship with every other soul who is united with us in longing, in loss, and in love. The defining and overarching truth of our immersion as human beings with every other soul who has dreamed and dared to love. And here now, the final several paragraphs of The Dead by James Joyce.
"I suppose you were in love with this Michael Fury, Greta," he said. "I was great with him at that time," she said. Her voice was veiled and sad. Gabriel, feeling now how vain it would be to try to lead her whither he had purposed, caressed one of her hands and said, also sadly, "And what did he die of so young, Greta?" "Consumption, was it?" "I think he died for me," she answered. A vague terror seized Gabriel at this answer, as if, at that hour, when he had hoped to triumph, some impalpable and vindictive being was coming against him, gathering forces against him in its vague world. But he shook himself free of it with an effort of reason, and continued to caress her hand. He did not question her again, for he felt that she would tell him of herself. Her hand was warm and moist. It did not respond to his touch, but he continued to caress it, just as he had caressed her first letter to him that spring morning. "It was in the winter," she said. "About the beginning of the winter, when I was going to leave my grandmother's and come up here to the convent. And he was ill at the time, in his lodgings in Galway, and wouldn't be let out. And his people in Outergard were written to. He was in decline, they said, or something like that. I never knew rightly." She paused for a moment and sighed. "Oh, poor fellow," she said. "He was very fond of me. And he was such a gentle boy. We used to go out together, walking, you know, Gabriel, like the way that they do in the country. He was going to study singing, only for his health. He had a very good voice, poor Michael Fury." "Well, and then?" asked Gabriel. "And then, when it came the time for me to leave Galway and come up to the convent, he was much worse, and I wouldn't be let see him, so I wrote him a letter saying I was going up to Dublin and would be back in the summer and hoping he would be better then." She paused for a moment to get her voice under control and then went on. "Then, the night before I left, I was in my grandmother's house in Nuns Island, packing up. And I heard gravel thrown up against the window. The window was so wet, I couldn't see, so I ran downstairs as I was and slipped out the back into the garden. And there was the poor fellow at the end of the garden shivering." "And did you not tell him to go back?" asked Gabriel. "I implored of him to go home at once, and told him he would get his death in the rain. But He said he did not want to live. I could see his eyes as well as well. He was standing at the end of the wall where there was a tree.
And did he go home? Asked Gabriel.
Yes, he went home. And when I was only a week in the convent, he died. And he was buried in Oughtergard, where his people came from. Oh, the day that I heard that, thought he was dead. She stopped, choking with sobs, and, overcome by emotion, flung herself face downward on the bed, sobbing in the quilt. Gabriel held her hand for a moment longer, irresolutely, and then, shy of intruding on her grief, let it fall gently and walked quietly to the window. She was fast asleep. Gabriel, leaning on his elbow, looked for a few moments unresentfully on her tangled hair and half-open mouth, listening to her deep-drawn breath. So, she had had that romance in her life. A man had died for her sake. It hardly pained him now to think how poor a part he, her husband, had played in her life. He watched her while she slept, as though he and she had never lived together as man and wife. His curious eyes rested long upon her face and on her hair. And, as he thought of what she must have been then, in that time of her first girlish beauty, a strange, friendly pity for her entered his soul. He did not like to say, even to himself, that her face was no longer beautiful. But he knew that it was no longer the face for which Michael Fury had braved death. Perhaps she had not told him all the story. His eyes moved to the chair over which she had thrown some of her clothes. A petticoat string dangled to the floor. One boot stood upright, its limp upper fallen down. The fellow of it lay upon its side. He wondered at his riot of emotions of an hour before. From what had it proceeded? From his aunt's supper? From his own foolish speech? From the wine and dancing? The merrymaking when saying good night in the hall? The pleasure of the walk along the river in the snow? Poor Aunt Julia! She too would soon be a shade with the shade of Patrick Morcan and his horse. He had caught that haggard look upon her face for a moment when she was singing Arrayed for the Bridal. Soon, perhaps, he would be sitting in that same drawing room, dressed in black, his silk hat on his knees. The blinds would be drawn down and Aunt Kate would be sitting beside him, crying and blowing her nose and telling him how Julia had died. He would cast about in his mind for some words that might console her, and would find only lame and useless ones. Yes, yes, that would happen very soon. The air of the room chilled his shoulders. He stretched himself cautiously along under the sheets and lay down beside his wife. One by one, they were all becoming shades. Bitter passed boldly into that other world, in the full glory of some passion, then fade and wither dismally with age. He thought of how she who lay beside him had locked in her heart for so many years that image of her lover's eyes when he had told her that he did not wish to live. Generous tears filled Gabriel's eyes. He had never felt like that himself towards any woman, but he knew that such a feeling must be love. The tears gathered more thickly in his eyes
and in the partial darkness he imagined, he saw the form of a young man standing under a dripping tree. Other forms were near. His soul had approached that region where dwell the vast hosts of the dead. He was conscious of, but could not apprehend, their wayward and flickering existence. His own identity was fading out into a grey and palpable world. The solid world itself, which these dead had one time reared and lived in.
A few light taps upon the pane made him turn to the window. It had begun to snow again. He watched sleepily the flakes, silver and dark, falling obliquely against the lamplight. The time had come for him to set out on his journey westward. Yes, the newspapers were right. Snow was general all over Ireland. It was falling on every part of the dark central plain, on the treeless hills, falling softly upon the Bog of Allen, and, farther westward, softly falling into the dark, mutinous Shannon waves. It was falling, too, upon every part of the lonely churchyard on the hill where Michael Fury lay buried. It lay, thickly drifted, on the crooked crosses and headstones, on the spears of the little gate, on the barren thorns. His soul swooned slowly as he heard the snow falling faintly through the universe, and, faintly falling, like the descent of their last end, upon all the living and the dead.